We believe if this project was assessed under proper processes and applying contemporary policies, that it would be found unacceptable. It's just not acceptable to have a project which releases 1.6 billion tonnes of carbon pollution into the atmosphere over its lifetime. It's just not acceptable to propose something which would equal the emissions from 15 coal-fired power stations every year till 2050. And it's just unacceptable to propose a project which would do irreversible damage to the incredible cultural heritage on the Burrup, which is right now proposed for World Heritage listing. We think if there was an assessment process, it would make it clear that this project is not acceptable and it wouldn't be able to proceed. And that's why we're fighting this case in the Supreme Court, to make sure that it does follow that proper process.
Welcome to Understory, this 16th day of June 2021. I'm Elizabeth Poe. On the weekend, the seven largest economies in the world pledged to halt funding for coal. That's it. New coal is over in the seven largest global economies. As well, they declared climate change an existential threat, while pledging to cut their greenhouse emissions and saying they want a green revolution, even the USA. Australia's Scott Morrison was an invited guest at the English Seaside G7 meetup, but he didn't find many ears ready to bend. He will always be remembered as the man who brought a lump of coal into Parliament. He's still spruiking its cause. At a recent Anglo-French Global Climate Summit, the Australian Prime Minister was refused a speaking slot for his increasingly isolated position. With projects like Adani Coal in Queensland and now Scarborough Gas off WA's northwest Burrup Peninsula, it's clear Australia cares very little about minimising greenhouse emissions, ignoring all those gathering global trends towards decarbonising the international economy. While Australia makes its global excuses, closer to home, last week, our state environment minister signed through the Scarborough LNG project. The Environment and Climate Action Minister, who is also WA's Commerce Minister, appears confident that Woodside can turn everything round and balance out at zero emissions by 2050, with the environment no worse off. That decision has left organisations like the shareholder activist group, the Australasian Centre for Corporate Responsibility, dumbfounded. Understory is speaking with Piers Verstegen, the director of WA's Conservation Council.
Yeah, well, the Scarborough Gas Project at the moment is the biggest and most polluting gas project proposed in Australia. But it's only one part of Woodside's much bigger Burrup Hub proposal. The Burrup Hub also includes a much larger gas field much further to the north, the Browse Basin, but that one is thankfully on hold, and Woodside are currently focusing its efforts on developing the Scarborough resource, which is also a very large gas field off the coast of the Pilbara, about 450 kilometres offshore, out in Commonwealth waters. And that is the gas field that they want to develop and bring online for processing as LNG, the expanded Pluto LNG project. And that would see the vast majority of that gas exported to international markets. The expanded Pluto project wouldn't just process the gas from the Scarborough field, it's also proposed to process gas from onshore sources, including the Waitsia project, which is part owned by Kerry Stokes and the West Australian, but also other onshore projects, potentially from gas fracking, would be processed as part of that Pluto expansion as well.
So what has the new minister decided?
Well, some months ago, we found out that the EPA was considering an application from Woodside for a greenhouse gas abatement plan for the Pluto project. And this was one of the final approvals that is required to go ahead with developing this Scarborough gas field and expanding the Pluto facility. The original approvals for the Pluto expansion were provided a couple of years ago. And at that time, there was no assessment made of the impacts on the climate or the impacts on the Aboriginal heritage, the Murujuga rock art that is being impacted by acid gas emissions on the Burrup Peninsula. So those original approvals were given without assessment, and We raised that concern with the EPA some time ago, and they recognised that there may be a problem with that legally. So they went back to Woodside to seek Woodside's consent to undertake assessment of this project, as required under the West Australian environmental legislation. Woodside has resisted that assessment, and the EPA then advised us that the only way this would be resolved is by a decision by the courts, because they believe they didn't have the legal powers to require Woodside to get the project assessed. Quite extraordinary in Western Australia that the EPA and the government itself doesn't believe it has the legal powers to require assessment of a project of this size and scale. So anyway, we have commenced action in the Western Australian Supreme Court to challenge those original environmental approvals, and we're seeking to overturn them on the basis that they didn't follow the proper process. In the meantime, we found out that Woodside had applied to the EPA for this further approval, this greenhouse gas abatement plan. And we found out that Woodside were not proposing much in the way of abatement measures or controls on their carbon pollution, but the EPA were considering this. And the EPA then advised the Minister in relation to this greenhouse gas abatement plan. We raised a number of concerns with the Minister and in the broader community about this further approval. It was our position that no further approvals should be provided for this project until proper environmental assessment had been undertaken and until the court case was concluded. But the Minister didn't follow that advice, and she has gone ahead and approved a greenhouse gas abatement plan for this project. What that does is it places some controls on the direct carbon pollution from this project. And when you look at carbon emissions from any major fossil fuel project, you've got to look at both the direct impact and the indirect impact. And we did some analysis of the Scarborough project, which showed the direct impact would be about a doubling of greenhouse gas emissions from the Pluto facility, approximately 1.7 million tonnes of additional carbon pollution every year here in Western Australia. But actually, that's only the smaller fraction of the total carbon pollution. When you look at the indirect impact, which is the Scope 3 emissions, that's the emissions that result from the burning of the gas, the combustion of the gas when it's exported overseas, that is roughly 10 times the size of the direct carbon pollution here in Western Australia. So the overall pollution from this project is about 1.6 billion tonnes of carbon pollution over its lifetime, including the Scope 3 emissions. That makes it larger than the proposed Adani coal mine in terms of total pollution. It's equal to about 15 coal-fired power stations running every year from now until 2055. So it's really a staggering amount of pollution, and it's absolutely not the kind of project that we should be proceeding with given the crisis that we face in relation to climate change. What the Minister's done is put some conditions on the project to reduce its direct pollution and requiring Woodside to achieve what they call net zero emissions by 2050. That doesn't mean they will actually reduce their emissions to zero. It means that they will be required to purchase offsets or do other things to create a net zero emissions. But in the meantime, the project will still dramatically increase the direct emissions. And those direct emissions won't get back to the same level that they are now until the 2040s under the greenhouse gas abatement program that's been approved. The other problem with the greenhouse gas abatement program is it doesn't address at all the much larger Scope 3 emissions. And these are the emissions that result from coal mining or gas extraction that really we need to take responsibility for. It is our molecules of carbon that are being taken out of the ground here in Western Australia that will end up in the atmosphere, and we absolutely need to take responsibility for those Scope 3 emissions. And there's a lot of legal precedents now, both internationally and here in Australia, showing that governments absolutely should be taking account of those Scope 3 emissions, and that governments and decision makers actually have a duty of care to future generations, particularly to young people, to consider the impacts of these emissions on those future generations.
Today on Understory, I'm speaking to Piers Verstegen, Conservation Council of Western Australia's Director, about the global significance of this state decision. Just over a year ago, Rio Tinto legally destroyed a 46,000-year-old indigenous rock shelter. The approvals, as well as the wider policy settings of the state government, are now of serious concern to environmental, heritage and Aboriginal community advocates.
But what's happening on the Burrup and the impact on the Murujuga Rookart is very, very similar to the Juukan Gorge situation. It's actually like the Juukan Gorge in slow motion. Because what is happening in here is that acid gases are being emitted from these LNG projects. Those gases go into the local atmosphere and they cause acidic atmospheric conditions. They also fall onto the rock art in the form of acid rain. And what is happening is that's eating away at the surface of these petroglyphs. If this was happening anywhere else in the world, it would be an international outrage. You can imagine if some of the, you know, European kind of heritage, Stonehenge, etc., was being eaten away by acid gas emissions, something would be done about it. But here in Western Australia, it's really just been swept under the carpet. And in fact, approvals are being made which make the problem worse without any assessment. And it's just been revealed in the media that there is no monitoring occurring on the rock art. There's no baseline data to understand what condition the rock art is in. So it's really a very, very bad situation. And there's so many parallels to what happened with Rio Tinto and Juukan Gorge. We have traditional owners that can't speak out. They're subject to gag clauses in legislation and in their funding agreements. We've got a lack of scientific understanding of what the impacts are. We've got Aboriginal heritage legislation, which is completely inadequate in terms of protecting this incredibly, globally significant, unique heritage. And we've got further expansions of these projects being provided without any assessment of their impacts. So, yeah, really there's an international outrage occurring on right in our backyard. But because it's happening in a remote part of Western Australia, and because it involves really powerful companies with cozy relationships with government, it's being swept under the carpet and there's just not enough public attention being paid to this problem.
Rio Tinto's legal destruction of Juukan Gorge happened with the former Treasurer and Aboriginal Affairs Minister, Ben Wyatt, watching on, unable to reverse the commercial arrangement. But now, just 3 months since he left office, Aboriginal leaders have been upset by Ben Wyatt's surprise appointment to the Rio Tinto board, picking up $219,178 in annual director's fees. Piers Versteken knows Aboriginal communities want to be able to speak out independent of mining companies' orders.
It's something that people from most other parts of Australia just don't appreciate, that it's across the board here in Western Australia. I mean, just about all of the Pilbara is covered by Indigenous land use agreements with traditional owners that provide some funding to them. In many cases, it's not a lot of funding, but in order to get that benefit, they have had to sign up to these gag clauses, which prevent them from speaking out against what is happening. And in many cases, they've had no choice but to do that because they haven't had veto rights under the legislation. They don't have a legal right to say no. So essentially, all they can do is try and make the most of the situation that they're in. And mostly that is to be signing these Indigenous land use agreements and therefore having these gag orders applied to them. Well, the corporate structures more or less reflect what these companies are allowed to get away with under legislation. And here in Western Australia, despite having some of the most incredible Aboriginal heritage, you know, and the longest continuing culture of anywhere on earth, we've got some of the weakest legislation when it comes to protecting those values and protecting that heritage and those people. So the corporate structures have reflected that. But I think now we're seeing, since Juukan Gorge, we're seeing some of the investors in particular realise that they can't rely on companies simply complying with legislation. That is just not good enough anymore. There's a public expectation now that companies do much better, and just because they are allowed to destroy these incredibly globally significant artifacts and places doesn't mean that they should be able to get away with doing that. And we've seen the repercussions with Rio Tinto.
Remind us what the repercussions for Rio Tinto were with Juukan Gorge.
Well, the share price collapsed. The CEO had to find a new job. There were several members of the board who had to find new jobs. And, you know, the reverberations of that are still continuing through that company. They also had to reset their relationships with traditional owners. And, for example, they've had to revoke these gag orders that they've got to make sure that traditional owners can speak out. It's going to take a long time for those changes to wash through the system for Rio Tinto. And, you know, it's yet to be seen how effective those changes will be. But with a company like Woodside, they haven't gone through those processes. They are still today, you know, impacting the cultural heritage in the same kind of way and proposing new projects which would accelerate that damage and cause it to become much worse with the current leadership structure that they've got in place. So, you know, I think there is going to be a time of reckoning for Woodside. If it's not under the legislation, then it's probably going to be through pressure from international shareholders and the broader community. Mm. But it's up to us to apply that pressure, otherwise these companies are unlikely to change.
Mm. Woodside is the largest operator of oil and gas extraction in Australia. The BHP Group is listed as the 93rd largest public company in the world. The Conservation Council and its affiliates are mainly made up of volunteers and low-paid staff with a huge workload. With the state government shrugging off any responsibility for greenhouse emissions in this decade, environment and heritage campaigners have only one last and very expensive resort, the Supreme Court.
Well, the Supreme Court challenge is targeting the primary approvals that were given for this expansion without environmental impact assessment. Yeah. And there's a clause in the Act which says, you know, major projects like this must go through environmental impact assessment by the EPA. What Woodside did is, instead of going through the front door and triggering an assessment of this project, they went through the back door and they asked the EPA to approve the expansion by simply changing the original approval that was provided for the Pluto facility back in 2007. That original approval was provided on the basis that the project was going to process gas from the Pluto gas field only. And what the EPA did at Woodside's request was to remove those references to the Pluto gas field, enabling the Pluto LNG project to process any gas from anywhere, from any gas field, for an unlimited period of time. And when they did that, they didn't assess any of the impacts that that would have on our climate or on the Murujuga rock art or any of the other impacts. So our argument to the court is based on the fact that that was an improper use of those powers under the legislation, that those approvals shouldn't have been given without assessment, and the court should strike out or make invalid those approvals and require Woodside to go back to the beginning and subject this this project to proper environmental impact assessment. We do need support for that, though, and we've been reaching out to people to make contributions because it's a very expensive process to take a case like this to the Supreme Court. Woodside are throwing everything they have at this. They've hired a very expensive legal team. They're trying to draw out the case and draw out the proceedings to essentially exhaust our resources. So we really need people to continue contributing to that, and they can donate to that through the crowdfund that's on our website. It's a tax-deductible donation, and yeah, we really encourage people to support the Supreme Court case in that way. This isn't just a case about this project either. It's a case about how Western Australia's environmental laws are used. And if we see projects like this being approved here in Western Australia without assessment, then we could see any number of further projects approved in a similar way without assessment. And really, it just completely undermines the whole basis of our environmental laws that we believe and have a right to expect protect us in this state.
Thanks to Piers Verstegen, Conservation Council of Western Australia's director, speaking with Understory this week. Last week's state environment approvals of Scarborough Gas Project here in Western Australia highlights the failures of our state governments to take global climate risks seriously. Since Jeff Gallop in the early 2000s, no WA Premier has produced a coherent long-term plan for action on the climate emergency. A favourite explanation by recent Liberal Premier Colin Barnett was that action on climate was largely a federal matter, a phrase repeated by Labour ministers in the subsequent Labour government. And now state Labour is signing off on massive greenhouse emissions in this fading window of investment opportunity. Yet the Woodside and BHP Scarborough to Pluto LNG project is the most polluting fossil fuel project in Australia. And at the same time, the G7 world leaders are pivoting to act on our 1.5 degree climate target, all before it's too late. The state government has waved through the oil and gas plan, and with it raised questions about the potential destruction of world-class heritage Ice Age petroglyphs. If you want more information about the Conservation Council campaign to take this matter to the Supreme Court, head for the Cons Council website at ccwa.org.au. And for more stories about the environment, join me, Elizabeth Poe, as well as Adrienne Glamorgan, each week, online, podcast and broadcast, as there's always more to explore with Understory, radio for the planet.